This is the lucky 13th edition of WFAE Talks. Joining me is our third grade reading law reporter, Lisa Miller.
Hey.
Hi, Lisa. Actually, you cover education more than, you do more than third grade reading law reporting. You cover education overall, but you had a good third grade reading law report this week.
Why, thank you.
And you've done a lot of third grade reading law reporting, so you'll be talking about that a little bit. And we have Jack of All Trades reporter who often reports on energy and the environment, Ben Bradford.
I like that.
You like that title?
Yeah. If we put senior in front of that, that would be great. Senior Jack of All Trades reporter.
Who often reports on the energy and the environment.
A lot more expansive than the narrow third grade reading feed over here.
Well, our topics this week, Dan Klodfelter takes over for Patrick Cannon, and meanwhile, the media gets cut off from public records related to Patrick Cannon. After much public outcry, Duke Energy suspends its program to stunt the growth of trees. And, of course, Lisa will give us her observations of a third-grade classroom trying to meet the state's reading law requirements. So, let's get started. Dan Klodfelter, he's now Mayor Klodfelter.
That's right.
You saw him in action this week.
Yeah, that's right. So he got appointed on Monday by the city council and then quit his job at the state assembly, at the general assembly on Tuesday, and then Wednesday got sworn in and was immediately at a budget meeting. And so that's, you know, pretty much every issue the city's going to be dealing with that has to deal with money, they're looking at it. And so he was immediately thrown in. I was at that meeting. Looking at a couple of things that had to do with Bojangles Coliseum and property tax. There's not going to be a for property owners out there. They're not expecting to do a property tax increase this year, which we thought might happen. So I was there looking at that stuff. But really, it was also Klodfelter's first action. So we got a few impressions of him.
What were your impressions?
Sort of like our interview with him on that same day he got sworn in with reporter Tom Bullock over on our website. But basically what he says in that is you know, he's doesn't really know a lot of the city issues at the moment. He obviously some of the big ones that he's dealt with in the legislature include, you know, the airport and we'll be talking about this business license tax a little bit later this week. So those are a couple ones that he knew about. But the rest of them, he says, you know, I really got to catch up on it.
With Tom's interview, I thought was really interesting when he has asked him about, you know, he said, hey, basically, you know, the populace did not elect you. You never had to go out and give your campaign speeches. So, you know, what's your platform? And he didn't really answer him, but it was a really telling response.
Now you're going to get me in trouble here because you're now asking the Christmas list, wish list kind of question, and that's not what I'm going to do, is not have a Christmas wish list. Look, Tom, there are an awful lot of things I've been involved in over the years as a council member first and then as a state legislator. And you look at that track record, you pretty well see sort of where my inclinations and my interests lie. I've always been very big on planning and on neighborhood development and neighborhood revitalization. Those have been important to me, and there's no secret about it.
You know, sometimes that's one of the beauties of radio, is just that you can hear the you hear the response, and you hear this sort of like, oh, like that it was a question that he wasn't, and there's a sort of an honest response there, and then he has to have his actual diplomatic answer.
On paper, it might not tell you much, but listening to it tells you a lot.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So I agree. I thought that was very interesting. The one other thing that, of course, Klodfelter is going to have to do is there's this question of public trust. And one of the things people have been asking about, that Tom asked about, is, all right, how do you restore the public trust after this big thing that happened with Patrick Cannon? And his answer to that is really, I don't know, but we're going to have to figure it out.
Yeah. And also, speaking of public trust, the media has been making a lot of requests for public records, including WFAE. You headed up our public records request, Ben.
That's right.
But don't plan on getting any responses to it for at least 60 days because the feds have requested that the city not release anything for at least 60 days.
That's right. So
and back to 2010 related to Patrick Cannon.
That's right. So we essentially – the public records law –
the media is outraged.
That's right. This is something where it's hard
journalists
to be,
are miffed.
Yeah, it's hard to be objective on this one because, of course, it's something that we're doing. It's something that we're asking for, and it's something that impacts our work. With that disclaimer out of the way, the idea is that if the taxpayers fund it, then the taxpayers should be able to see it. On a federal level, you can request all kinds of documents, whether that's, you know, emails or you know, financial records or personnel records or Those kind of things. And the idea is that, you know, if you can request them, you have to figure out what they are, and you target them, and you can get them. Every state has their own laws. North Carolina's is both very broad mm-hmm. and has some very large holes in it.
And there are exemptions.
That's right. That's right.
But if a public record is a public record and doesn't fall in those exemptions, you know, many reporters and me being one of those journalists – believes it's public.
And there are, you know, again, on the federal level, for the Freedom of Information Act, that's the law that covers it on the federal level. You can withhold records if they're going to interfere with ongoing investigations, and you can, fair trial. There are things where you can withhold them because of investigations. With that said, you can appeal on the grounds of reasonableness. The idea being, that can you really withhold mm-hmm. 4 years of emails and documents and correspondence and public calendars and those kinds of things? Is it really reasonable to say, okay, well, if we release any of those things, we are going to be hurting an investigation and hurting someone's right to a fair trial?
And this is just a blanket thing.
Right. Is that reasonable? and so there's a question, first of all, just about that. In North Carolina, it's tricky. First of all, there's some lawyers who've suggested in the Charlotte Observer, the counsel for the North Carolina Press Association basically says, well, North Carolina's public records law does not have an exemption for those kind of things. If it's a public record, it's a public record. Obviously, there are things where there are exemptions. There's big exemptions for personnel files, mm-hmm. Complaints, those kinds of things. At the same time, there's very little recourse in North Carolina, the way that the city, for instance, pulls records, for the most part, they're doing it a little bit differently for this investigation. Usually what happens is if I say, hey, I would like to see Patrick Cannon's public calendar.
Which you did ask for.
Which I have asked for. Mm-hmm. His assistant who keeps his calendar, his former assistant who keeps his calendar, would go through, pull that document, and send it over. If I say, hey, I want to see the emails that were sent on such and such day related to or throughout this month related to a certain term, they would go over to that person and say, hey, search through your email and grab that term. So and then send us all those emails.
Yeah. Not immediately, but within a reasonable amount of
time. Within time. Yeah, it takes time. And of course, there is an enormous amount of workload. Sure. And I'm sure the city is facing, we're talking about this today in our news meeting, that the city is undoubtedly facing an enormous amount of work.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I am curious about, because I know that the feds have requested this huge amount of documents going back to 2010, anything that involves Patrick Cannon. And, you know, basically, you know, they've told staff to go ahead and start going through these documents. But can you imagine how much city business is getting done? Mm-hmm. And I know they're also going through their own sort of like central archived repository of everything, too. But I am just curious of, you know, how much of a time suck this has to be on city staff. And is there anything, what's getting done at the city right now?
Sure.
And I understand if they have to give the Justice Department priority in meeting
right.
these public
right.
records
the,
requests.
Yes.
I mean,
big
yes.
question.
yes,
we are right. reasonable people.
That's
right.
understandable.
The U.S. attorney asking for blanket.
The idea that they can say, oh, yeah, hey, just don't release anything for 4 years. I mean, that is a very, very broad statement. Mm-hmm. And in terms of justification, you know, how do you justify, for instance, I'll give you an example. You know, I asked for a list of the other requests that other media outlets have given. How could that possibly affect the investigation?
Mm-hmm.
Right? It can't.
No.
It can't. That is something where after the fact, we just wanted to see what other people were requesting. You can do that because they developed a list of all these different things. We just wanted to see, kind of match it up to
that was our only public records request, by the way.
It was not our only public records request. We had 28 separate tranches of information that we
requested.
I know.
I saw and participated in that.
That's right.
That very thorough list.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, the idea that, oh, yeah, we're going to withhold that because it's related to Patrick Cannon is, I mean, obviously I'm opinionated here, but I don't see how you can possibly argue that that is going to interfere with the investigation when it's a list compiled by news media after the fact. That's, yeah, so.
Well, another story that's getting a lot of attention, Duncan McFadden reported on it for us, is Duke Energy and its program to stunt the growth of trees. They suspended it this week after much public outcry. What they were doing was They had there was a chemical that they were injecting in the root systems of trees in some very heavy tree neighborhoods and to stunt the growth. And people, this was a surprise to people, and people were pretty upset.
Yeah,
I have to admit, I so wanted to report this story.
We joked a little.
Duncan did a great job.
But, yeah, I was out that day, so this particular environmental story went over to Duncan. Yeah, and he did a good job on it.
Yeah.
I was kind of surprised because knowing Charlotte is very sensitive about its trees.
Sure,
Duke Energy is based in Charlotte. You would think there would be a little bit more.
Well, this is classic. I mean, remember, we had this before. They were going along, and what were they doing? They were like buzzsawing parts of trees in what
heavy
town
duty
was it?
Trimming.
Do you remember this? Julie Rose covered this back in the day.
Oh yeah,
about a year ago.
And it was up in Guilford County too. Yes. I think was the real. Right. But I mean, there's so many surprises in this story. Like, I had no idea that there was a chemical that people used to stunt trees so that they wouldn't grow into the power lines as quickly.
Right. And so this is
and you know that you inject this into the root soil system, and you know they advise, hey, don't eat the nuts off the trees,
which we learned that they're not doing the nut trees. We learned through Duncan's
story. They're not doing fruit and nut trees is what they said.
Didn't know that.
Sure.
And that
there's also a question though. I mean, you know, there are other animals that eat things, and you know, I mean, that's their habitats. That's their
cankerworms.
There's a lot of things there. Oh yeah, we got to worry about this cankerworms.
it probably would be a good solution for the cankerworms, but you have to.
And you know, Duncan did a good job pointing out that you know he went and talked to some scientists about this, and they said, you know, listen, you'd have to, you know, if you were a kid, you'd have to eat a lot of soil, for to see any effects from this. And I would question how much soil if the kid's eating that much soil in the first place. Like how much of a problem that is.
I've heard a lot of stories about kids getting
It does raise some questions. Honestly, my first reaction to this seems kind of like classic Duke in the sense that they are, I mean, these are guys that, I mean, they're fully committed to just, you know, we are going to get you your power. Mm-hmm. And so these trees could interfere with the power lines. So, you know, everything that they can do to stop the trees from hitting those power lines. And it seems kind of classic to me without thinking about necessarily one, the
seems
the PR
like a,
reaction.
A simple solution, you know, on Duke's, well, Duke's side as far as
they still have to trim them every 5 years. True. It's the same schedule. It just saves them some time on it. And in addition to that, you know, they're promoting the health benefits of giving the trees these things I think the flyer that the contractor sent out and was hanging on people's doors says on it, the tree can spend, I'm paraphrasing obviously, but it says the tree can expend its energy instead of on growing new tree limbs on
getting bushier,
on being bushier and
really?
Yeah, more robust yeah. And greener and those kind of things. Like, oh great, yeah, it's like a super vitamin for trees that also happens to stunt its growth. Like, you can see where people are kind of like, wait a minute, what's happening?
People are
here?
Skeptical,
particularly when you just have crews coming out injecting things into the trees that people care so much about. And I think there is a question. I mean, there's a question about what's the trade-off there, right? I mean, do we really want to have things where you're not supposed to touch the soil or you're not supposed to be, you know, interacting with that soil nearby for days after, and you're not going to, you know, you're not supposed to eat things from those trees for years. Now, granted, you know, like you said, they're not, even if they're not injecting, you know, even if they're avoiding fruit and nut trees, you know, I do question, you know, what's going on with the animals there how do you deal with that?
And a lot of homeowners had those same questions as well.
And even if this is not a high hazard chemical, which, you know, I mean, the scientists that Duncan talked to say it is not a high hazard chemical, even if that's the case, I mean, is the trade off there really worth it? The idea that, okay, the tree is going to grow a little bit slower, so you have to do less trimming, but you're still going to have to do trimming on the same schedule.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you're Duke and a bonsai lover, great things. Great things all together right there.
All right. Well, let's go on to final topic for this week's show, the third grade reading law. Lisa, you've done a lot of reporting on what the politicians and education leaders have to say about this third grade reading requirement. But you went into the classroom in Mooresville and saw how teachers are trying to get third graders up to snuff on the reading law.
Sure. It was really nice after hearing, you know, so much about this from state lawmakers, from the district level, from the State Board of Education to actually see what it looks like in the classroom. a big thing that has come about with this legislation are these reading portfolios. So they're basically, the teacher describes it to her kids as a safety net. They're a series of 36 tests. And, you know, if you don't pass the end of year reading test, well, you know, if you've made it through these tests, then you can use those to go on to be a full-fledged fourth grader. The kid is going to go to fourth grade anyway. It just depends if they're going to have this retention label mm-hmm. or not on them. So seeing how teachers are working that into the classroom was really fascinating. And what the school, Parkview Elementary in Mooresville, that I went to, you know, they use these tests maybe twice a week. And then they have sort of a practice test once a week that they go over and review. So it's a learning tool as well. But, you know, the state, I talked to folks at the state saying, okay, how ideally would you use this? And said, well, you kind of pull kids over, you know, at the side of the class. They can, you know, take this test while the kids are doing something else. And, you know, the teacher can kind of be going back and, you know, forth with their time, or, you know, there doesn't have to be too much monitoring. But, you know, that can be really hard mm-hmm. to do in a classroom. So, you know, what they tried to break up in small groups. In one of the classrooms I went, like the higher level readers who are, you know, just fine and as far as passing the test, they were doing some reading work with a teaching assistant. But then two-thirds of the class who were kind of on the borderline.
Two-thirds.
Yeah, two-thirds of the class were taking that test. And, you know, the state says, hey, it should be a pretty fast test. But, you know, some kids are taking it 20 minutes, 30 minutes. So it can consume a lot of time. And when you think there's 36 of these tests that you're fitting within one semester, I mean, that is a big time commitment. And, you know, with the reading portfolios, I should say the state says, hey, we don't expect all these kids to be going through the reading portfolio process. But when you talk to teachers, when you talk to principals, superintendents, they say, hey, if we have a chance to make sure that this kid goes on to fourth grade as they should, you know, without that label, we want to give them every chance. So it's kind of a bind.
Did you get the sense that they are focusing on this and that other subjects they're not spending as much time on?
At this school, this was all fit into their reading classes. Mm-hmm. So they have about 5 hours of reading classes a week. And the teacher I spoke with there, Andrea White, she said, look, about an hour and a half, a third of my time is spent going through these tests. In other places, I have heard that, you know, in order to focus on reading, that kids, you know, may not be going to that whole science class or that whole social studies class. So, you know, it's there's
did
a
some
lot...
parent of a third grader tell you that?
Yeah, maybe so. But
Greg, are we going to see you as like a source in Lisa's stories and an unnamed source who spoke off the record for fear of reprisal against his third grader?
I've been very upfront that I have a third grader in CMS, but I don't know. It's interesting. I mean, maybe wonder, as I've talked to you about doing these stories, do I think it's more important than most people because I'm affected and I'm trying to understand this law in regard to my daughter?
It's
made me wonder if signing, having these stories is I've influenced that too much because of my own circumstance.
But really, it's interesting because, I mean, this law kind of hits on so many factors because you have this law going into effect this year. But then, you know, with other changes, you've had tests getting harder and then you've had the grading getting harder. And this is across the board mm-hmm. so that the state board tweaked the grading a little bit. But, I mean, you were looking at, you know, kids not passing the test, you know, two-thirds of them. Mm-hmm. And that was varied throughout subjects, you know, third through 12th grade. So.
All right. Well, that was a good story. Encourage people to listen to that at WFAE.org. And until next week, guys.
All right. Sounds good.
Thank you.
Thanks.